And he says in his book, he said, this experiment was based on my belief that human beings are created to live in peace. And if given the choice, would choose peace over violence. Now, you may scoff at that. My cynicism would at first as well. But he's gone to these countries all across the country and literally into the worst parts. And the people there are choosing peace and living it. It's amazing. Kid, I'm sorry that we lost you there, brother. I was just talking about how you believe that when given a choice, people will choose peace over violence, even though violence is all they've ever known.
Absolutely. It's if you got to give them that choice and respect where they are and then challenge them. And it's predicated on the fact that we're born into this world in a very peaceful state. And children, I mean, we're not born in the world hating. We learn it. We're not born racist. We learn it. We're not born judging, you know, people by the color of their skin or their accent or their religion or their, you know, whatever. Those are all learned behaviors, and that's what we're teaching our kids in our society. And so if we can learn it, we can unlearn it, and we can learn to, you know, respect and to love and to honor and value. And so in these prisons, these, you know, I'll be in what is the toughest prison in Baja, Mexico, out of the eight, on Monday and Tuesday, 5,600 inmates in a prison that was built for 2,500. They're packed, 20 in a cell when there should be six. And I'll be working with what the prison officials are telling me are the toughest inmates, the ones that are leading, you know, the groups in there. And so, you know, we know there's a lot of cartel guys in there, a lot of gangs in there, and they're going to allow me to work two full days with the leaders. We're going to pick 40. And I'm going to go in there and do the same thing that I do in every prison and the community and school in different parts of the world, four continents, and a lot of states and a whole lot of prisons, is look at them without judgment, without fear, and look them in the eye, man to man, and remind them who they are and then challenge them. And they appreciate being treated that way. And so that's how we start.
Awesome. One last question about prison specifically for now, and then we'll get back to it, because I want to bring it into what's going on the streets and what's happening in the rest of the world outside of the prisons. But you talk in your book, Peace Behind the Wire, and last time we talked about the power that MLK has and the influence that, that name has, and how you use that and then use him and you use his message and you appeal. And I said you appeal to these men's pride, but you said, no, it's not appealing to their pride. It's something a little different. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, it's appealing to their honor and their integrity, their loyalty. I've learned working with these men in the toughest prisons that those words mean something, and more than they do to the average person in the free world. Their respect is everything. If they disrespect the wrong person, the consequences for them are a lot different than somebody in the free world. You know, if they give their word on something and then break it, the consequences for them, very, very dangerous. Mm-hmm. If someone in a church says, hey, I'll be there, and doesn't show up, well, the consequences are you might, you know, piss somebody off.
Yeah.
Or you might lose a friend. Or loyalty. If I say, I've got you, I got your back, and I will be there, and something happens and I don't show up, well, what are the consequences out here? In there, it could be life and death. So I found that there's this code, there's this honor among these men that is very, very deep. And if we challenge them, I say, what does your word mean? And they raise their hands, and I say, what does your word mean? They say, everything. And how about you, sir? Man, it's my life. It's my bond. It's my code. I'm like, all right, then we're going to prove it. Over the next 40 days, I'm going to challenge you to live by these seven principles, and we're going to see if your word really means something. Because you guys just said, you told me the word means something. And there's accountability that happens in that group. And these men look at one another, and these are rivals. I mean, we do it. There's Crips and Bloods and Gangster Disciples and, you know, Aryan Brotherhood, tough, tough enemies. And they stand up together and say, all right, for 40 days, we're going to respect one another, and we're going to listen to one another, and we're going to seek common ground with one another. We're going to find solutions together, and we're going to put on this wristband. And for the next 40 days, if you see that wristband on me and I see it on you, we remember what we've committed to, and we're going to find out who the real men are in this group. And this is for real men right here. And you're right, Dr. King, they still mad respect for Dr. King. It gets their attention. And they all have to agree that he was a real man, had something he was willing to die for. And I'm like, okay, I believe you can be. And by the way, I travel a lot and tell everybody what's going on down here. So you guys are now accountable. Don't make me a liar, because I'm going to go out here and talk about how you guys are becoming peacemakers. And it's amazing what happens.
And it's amazing when you say MLK, they love him, they respect him. And but then you catch them in like a little trap because you say, was he a violent man? And right, it's like, no, obviously not. But
right.
why do they respect him when he didn't do violent things like they obviously did because they're in prison?
I think they respect, and it's not just men, but we're having to be talking about men right now. They respect courage. Okay, because they are the men, and I tell them this. I'm like, you guys have proven that you are the type of men that are willing to go to any length to get what you want. Okay, and they all kind of nod and laugh a little bit. I said, look where we are. I mean, look, okay, you are willing to do whatever it takes. That sets you apart from a lot of people in the world. Is you might have done the wrong things to get what you want, or you might have even gone after things that you shouldn't have wanted, but you have courage. And if I had to go to battle, I would pick y'all 10 times out of 10 than I would the average guy on the street. So I'm showing them respect, and I'm appealing to their manhood, their courage, their, you know, and I'm like, let's talk about the most courageous individuals the world's ever seen, the ones that were killed for their beliefs. And I start with Dr. King, and then we go to Gandhi, and then we talk about Mandela. And he, you know, did 27 years, 18 of which were the toughest time, the hardest time you can do. They respect those men. And then we start talking about, okay, now, were they violent? Were they peaceful? You know, why were they real men? Tell me why you respect them. And then we start a conversation. And you know, what are you willing to die for? You know, are you willing to die just for stupidity? Are you willing to die because you looked at somebody the wrong way? Or die for a drug? Or die for a, you know, a stack of money? Are you willing to, what are you willing to die for? If you're going to die, let's die for something valiant. And I pull them in. This is a movement. You're invited into a movement today. But this is a movement for real men, not for punks. And if you're a punk, you know, that just wants to run around stealing, robbing, you know, bullying, killing, then you're not man enough for this movement. Please step aside.
I love it.
And they look at me like I'm crazy.
Well,
they
sure.
Love it.
This it appeals to everything in us, which is why everyone likes the movie Braveheart, right? I mean, like that's what it, like
yes.
That's what
yes.
You're appealing because yes. every man has that in them. So you take their word, yes. Their loyalty, their honor, their courage, and you channel it to something righteous, and that's beautiful. Can we take a break, Kit, real quick? We'll do another segment. You got some time?
I've got all the time you need.
Thank you, brother. And I want to talk about how we can take those truths, and you may be skeptical, maybe a little cynical. You're like, nah, it's not. It's what he says. That's real life. It's happening. He's been there. He's doing it. I want to talk about how we can relate this to our lives, relate this to the Black Lives Matter movement, relate this to what happened in Dallas, relate this to the inner cities, relate this to our future and the division that we are told exists in America. All right, we'll bring this back down next. 1-800-760-KFMB. This is Kit Cummings. The book is called Peace Behind the Wire. Mike Slater Show. Spread the word. So Kit Cummings travels to prisons around the country, challenging the males in there to bring out what makes them a man, which is different. Male is biological. Being a man is so much more. So Kit finds the best in these people and challenges them to peace, which is what real men stand for. Cowards stand for violence. Cowards stand for violence. Men stand for peace. We know that's true. So Kit, we're chatting about, you know, what happened in Dallas in this last week and where we're headed. So big question, what have you learned with all your time in these prisons, talking to these people there, that we can apply to our lives and to our country and culture right now? What do we need to know?
Well, I think the amazing thing that I've witnessed, and it was what I dreamed could happen, but until you see it, you know, you obviously, it could just be a dream that I have and you try it, it doesn't work. It worked. And when we got rival gangs in the same room and then seated at the same table for 40 days and, you know, rivals that have been enemies just because of the color they wear, you know, or the color of their skin or the city they come from. When they sat down with one another and started just doing some simple exercises, conversation, and really learning how to speak respectfully to their enemies and listen instead of, you know, trying to talk and really trying to find commonality. Like you said in your intro, we have more in common than what separates us. Miracles begin to happen. And I literally have seen white supremacist Aryan Brotherhood, toughest white gangs in prisons, doing the convict hug, which is not big chest to chest embrace, but it's kind of, there's a
we'll
way.
Take it, we'll take it. Yeah.
I'll teach you sometime. But I mean, at graduation, after they've accomplished this amazing feat of no violence for 40 days and respect, and to see them do the convict hug and respect one another, and they might not hang out and sing Kumbaya in the prison yard, but when they see each other, they nod and they're like, what's up? And they're not fighting anymore. And so what I've learned from that, we can take that to the street. This is what our country is engaged in, is everyone is choosing a side. Everybody's digging in deep, and all they want to do is shout their message and what they believe. And the program that we do in the toughest prisons, which does work in communities, is we get the two parties seated and get them to commit to these seven principles and practice them, and then you get a chance to speak. But if we can start to listen to the other and try to, if those in blue felt the pain of our black brothers and sisters, if our black brothers and sisters felt the fear of the men and women in blue, and they were able to get close enough to look each other in the eyes and really listen and feel, I feel you, is what they say in their language. You hear that a lot in prison. You feel me? You feel me? Yeah. And if we can get them to see one another and feel one another, and these men and women in blue are just trying to go home to their family at night, but these beautiful black brothers and sisters that are caught up in this thing are scared to death of, you know, this happening to them next. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. Everybody's right and everybody's wrong. You know, we got to come together. So, and if I can see Crips and Bloods doing it, then why can't we do cops and communities that way?
Love it. What do we have in common then? What are some things that people have in common that we don't look at because we're so focused on, let's say, color of skin or whatever?
How about this? I get a man, you know, in a room full of convicts, and I say, sir, you mind to stand? And I say, yeah, what's your name, sir? My name's Bill. Hey, Bill. Bill, do you have kids? Yep. And so what are their names? Well, I got little Michael, and I got Cynthia, and I got Lisa. And I'm like, how old are they? They're 8 and 10 and 12, all right? And then I repeat back, okay, Bill, so you got, all right, look, we're going to do something. Everybody, you know, raise your hand if you believe in prayer. You know, everybody does, you know. I'm like, all right, we're going to pray for Bill's kids right now. Anybody that will, say it with me. God, today we pray for little Cynthia and for Lisa and for Michael right now, that you put a hedge around them, protect them from all the violence in the community, and we pray for them. And then all of us together, all the men in blue right now, I want you to say Michael, and they say Michael. Say Cynthia, and they say Cynthia. Say Lisa. And then all together say, God bless Bill's children. And they all say it with me. And I go, Bill, when you woke up this morning in your cell, did you think you were going to have 100 inmates praying for your kids? And he's in tears. And then I sit down and I say, now, when y'all see Bill on the prison yard, how can you hate him? You prayed for his kids today. And magic happens in that moment. And what have we found? What do they have in common? Children. They're all fathers. Almost all of them. And all of them love their kids. And so there's a place we can start.
That's awesome. Why did you join the march in Atlanta the other day?
Well, everybody wants to shout and talk about what they believe, whether they're against it, for it. You know, people are angry. I believe that you don't have the right to speak much about it if you haven't experienced it. And so I went down. I happen to be a white man. I happen to be, you know, I don't know what middle age is, but 52. And, you know, and I went down because I wanted to, I believe in walking a mile before you judge. And so I can't have a strong opinion. I have a voice, and it's a public voice. I do radio, TV, write books, travel. But I want to have a voice that is educated and, you know, that understands the other side. So I walked with people in pain. I walked with people that were angry. I walked with people that were sad. I even followed around. I found a group of rival gang members, a whole pack of them, that were running around in solidarity, which is very interesting because they're wearing their colors, blue and red and black, and they were throwing up signs and they were doing their shouts, but they were all together and they weren't fighting because they had found some commonality, right? And so I followed them around for a while, and, you know, I talked to people, and now I can process it and try to figure out, okay, how do I feel now that I've walked with a wounded community, you know?
Yeah.
And
so
then
we
it helps me.
Yeah, I understand. We got about 60 seconds. I'm sorry to cut you off here, brother, but what's your conclusion having done that?
I'd love to see town hall meetings across the country where we find civic leaders, clergy, community leaders on the people of color side, and some families who have been affected by these shootings, and then politicians and police chiefs and sheriffs, and then we all come together and the community rallies, but everyone has to sign the pledge when they walk in the room about how they're going to operate for the next 2 hours. And we let people speak, and we really get a conversation going, and then we have an action plan before we leave that we all agree on what's the next step. And I want to hold town hall meetings across the country, just like Dr. King. We're going to model Dr. King.
Wow, maybe we can do that here in San Diego with the one Kit Cummings leading the charge, teaming up.
You just invite, go where I'm invited, brother.
That's we'll call that an invite, but we'll make it more official. Let's do that, man. That sounds amazing. Last quick question for you. We want to talk about fatherhood later, and we have someone on the phone here that I'll take in the next segment who grew up in a foster home but can't wait to teach his son how to be a man, and I'm excited to learn from Mark here. But what do the guys in prison or males you've dealt with who never had fathers present in their childhood, what are they lacking in adulthood because they didn't have a present dad? Generally, obviously.
Gosh, so much. I think if somebody said, what's the biggest problem in America with what's going on, I would say it's the absent father. And so think about, we learn so much from our fathers, good, bad. We learn from them not being there if they're not there. We learn from, you know, just all of us as men carry wounds from our fathers and lessons from our fathers. And so to be a real man, you've got to see what a real man looks like. And so if your father wasn't there, you need somebody. You need an older mentor. We need to start honoring the older men in our country, because in these prisons, the young men, they do not respect the old convicts, and the old convicts have washed their hands of the young generation, and we've got to bring them together, and that's something else we do in there. But a real man has had a real man lead him. They got to know what one looks like, or we can't ask them to be it.
That's a great
and
point.
So, you know.
Kit, you the man, brother. We'll stay in touch always, all right?
Appreciate you. Keep doing you.
Thanks, man. Stay safe when you're out here in San Diego next week.